Looking to get out of the ads and back to the story? Fable and Folly Plus is a new way to support the creators you love. The podcast you're listening to right now and more than 50 others can be heard ad-free for as little as $4 per month by visiting fableandfolly.com/plus. There you can have an easy, uninterrupted listening experience in your favorite podcast player and directly support the creators you love. Fable and Folly Plus. Sign up today at fableandfolly.com/plus.
Hello, Orphans fans. It is so wonderful to be speaking with you again. I'm dropping into the feed today to give you a bit of an update on the status of the show. I know it's been a long time since we released a season of The Orphans, but I want to reassure you that we are not yet finished telling stories in this world. We have been keeping our patrons over at patreon.com/lightandtragic up to date with the latest goings-on over the last year, and wanted to give you some of those highlights as well. We are currently working on 3 series of The Orphans. The first is a follow-up to Exposé, which will see Cordelia Vale traveling through wild space searching for Rachel. The second is a spin-off of Wild Tales, specifically the episode Brick by Brick by Hannah Martins. That series will explore the ground level of the Alliance. Both of those series are well into the scripting stage, and we're excited to tell you more soon. The third is a follow-up to The Orphans Investigation. We were about midway through production on a season of The Orphans that followed up on the investigation storyline when the pandemic hit. Over the 2.5 years since we had to stop production, I realized that I was not satisfied with the story we were telling. I've spent the last year and a bit reconsidering our next steps for the show, and I'm pleased to say that I have a strong take on where we're going next, and I have begun outlining the season. James Barbarossa, my creative partner in Light and Tragic, is going to be helping me develop the idea further. A huge factor in the drop-off of Orphans content was burnout on my part, not feeling like I could carry on. I've taken some time away to refocus on other creative projects, and now, returning to The Orphans, I'm feeling more motivated than ever to continue telling the stories of Nora, Olivia, Jeffrey, William, Richard Hart, Diana Strange, and Axel. If you'd like to share your thoughts on how you'd like to see this follow-up to Investigation go, then we're actually looking at our fan Discord. There is an Orphans spoiler discussion thread where we are talking to our fans about how they'd like to see the show carry on. And if you'd like to join the discussion, then check the link in the podcast description where you can join the Discord and have your say. We are hoping to have more Orphans content out to you soon. We will give you a more specific timetable when we are further along in the process. In the meantime, I wanted to tell you about the other creative projects that I have been working on. James Barbarossa and I launched an actual play podcast called Realms of Peril and Glory. In this podcast, we play games like Dungeons & Dragons with some of the greatest voices from around audio drama and design cinematic sounds and scores to accompany these stories to really bring them to life. We are excited to continue working on the show along with New Orphans content. We think you would really love some of the work we've done over the last couple of years on Realms, and so we've lined up something that we want to play for you after this update. It's an excerpt from the first episode of our series, Nibiru Erebus. From The Orphans, it features myself, Ella Watts, and James Barbarossa, as well as Sasha Sienna from the Magnus Archives and David Devereaux from Tin Can Audio. It's a thrilling science fiction series about people who wake up on the edge of the world with no memory of who they are. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? We think you're really going to enjoy it, and if you want to check out the rest of the episode after this, then you can check out the link in the podcast description. If you enjoy this segment, then you might be excited to check out the rest of the series. We have guests from the cast of The Orphans, including Beth Eyre, Declan Galpin, Felix Trench, Beth Crane, Laura Gerling, Pip Gladwin, David Devereaux, and Katrina Allen, as well as voices from all over audio drama, including Danielle Shamaya, Sasha Sienna, Maddie Searle, Ella Watts, Kai Gwillem-Pritchard, Kat Blackard, John Sebastian Laval, Hedley Knights, and more. We hope you come and join us over on Realms of Peril and Glory, and we look forward to seeing you for more Orphans content soon. And now we hope you enjoy this excerpt from Nibiru Erebus.
Hello, and welcome to Realms of Peril and Glory, an actual play podcast by Light and Tragic Productions, and a member of the Fable and Folly podcast network. My name's Ella Watts, my pronouns are she, her, and I'm going to be your GM today as we delve into the dark and labyrinthine world of Nibiru, a science fiction RPG of lost memories. Nibiru was written by Federico Sones and is a property of Araucana Media. That's A-R-A-U-K-A-N for November A. You can find out more about the game by following them on social media at Araucana1 or by visiting their website www.araucana.com. I really recommend checking them out. And if you missed any of that, don't worry, Zach is going to put it in the show notes. Today, I am joined by the lovely Sasha Sienna, our very own Zachary Fortis-Gom and James Barbarossa, and the wonderful David Devereaux. Hello, players. Please introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm Zach. You've heard me before, so no need to hear from me again.
No, Zachary, I would like you please to give me your name, your pronouns, and your podcast background.
Okay. My name is Zachary Fortis-Gom. My pronouns are he, him. You know me from this podcast, GM for the Veil campaign, and the creator of the Orphans podcast.
Perfect. James.
Hi, my name is James Barbarossa. I'm he, him, and I. You also may know me from this podcast. I'm the GM for the You Awaken in the Strange Place games, and I do odds and ends creatively for the Orphans.
Cool. Dev?
Hello, my name is David Devereaux. My pronouns are he, they, and I currently make podcasts as Tin Can Audio. We made Middle Below, we made The Tower, we make Folklore, and we also make the Dungeon Economic Model.
Gorgeous. And Sasha.
Hi, I'm Sasha Sienna. My pronouns are she, he, or they. I am a games designer and role player with MacGuffin and Company. And you might also know me from Rusty Quill and miscellaneous RPG podcasts and Twitch streams.
They are a darling. So welcome all. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I am so excited to play this game with you. So the way that Nibiru works is that we use every roll in the game is 3d4s. And if you get a 4, it's a success. And if you don't, it's a failure. But there are some ways around that. You can use influence points. Each of you have 3 starting now. An influence point, you can burn one to reroll as many of your dice as you like in a given challenge. Or you can reroll another player's dice. You can also use an influence point to add a small environmental detail to the scene. But there is another, even more important way you can tackle challenges in Nibiru. Indeed, it is core to the very game. And that is by using your memory points. Each of you has 3 memory points at the beginning of this game. And you can spend memory points to automatically succeed on a given challenge as your character, your vagabond, remembers something from their past that allows them to overcome the challenge at hand. This will give them a permanent bonus to that skill, whether it's playing the piano or climbing a cliff face. And it is also, you know, obviously sort of significant to them because it's the only thing they know about themselves. There's another way that you can create memories in Nibiru, which is if you get 3 4s, that's a critical hit, the rule of 3s, you get an automatic positive memory. You didn't realize that you had a positive association with fishing, but it turns out that you really loved fishing in a past life. Or a negative memory. Turns out you hated fishing in a past life. And now every time you do something to do with fishing, you're going to get a -1. But we will deal with that as we go. Do any of you have any questions before we get started?
Nope.
Nope.
All right. So, Nibiru is a world very unlike our own. In this reality, human civilization evolved on a planet-sized space station. They have no concept of stars or sky, soil or oceans. Here, the only flora to be found are the various kinds of bioelectric fungi, which glitter in the labyrinthine steel roads of the world. Nibiru does, of course, have its own fauna, bioelectric creatures which drink the blood of the world, or else parasites which feed on the electrical impulses to be found in other living things. In this world, humanity grew up alongside technology, and it leaves civilization in a strange state. Localized intranet exists in some more prosperous vaults, and automata are captured and hacked using what's referred to as Riddler code, rendering sentient machines into what we would recognize as robots. To get an idea of the kind of world you're entering, imagine dieselpunk Mesopotamia. Engines and some primitive forms of computing exist, but only in the most wealthy and prosperous of settlements would energy be wasted on anything so frivolous. In most of the world, humanity's story in Nibiru is a tale of survival. Survival on a planet where the oxygen disappears, where temperatures drop below the surface of the moon, and where Kabadu, the world's punishment, gravity, becomes so enormous that it crumples machines like paper. The world you're entering exists in three tiers, analogous to continents. At the height of human civilization, both literally and figuratively, is Antumbra. These are the wealthy, safe, stable city-states, built in the warm vaults closest to the core of the station, the heart from which all light and heat seems to emerge. Like a heart, the core pulses on what are known as lapses, 24-hour cycles brightening and flooding the world with light before it dims and leaves society in the dark, like a great and mighty heartbeat. In Antumbra, sprawling megacities compete with one another over trade and resources, and governments are riddled with the machinations of corrupt politicians. Below Antumbra is Penumbra, which is something like the North American frontier. Here, it takes weeks or months to travel between settlements, and townships are often at risk of destruction from sudden resource scarcity. They depend heavily on their patron states in Antumbra, but in recent years, Antumbran exploitation of Penumbraic resources has been a source of rising tension, and the Penumbran or Enyesu people may yet rise up for their independence. Travel through the Long Lapse Way, a massive tunnel hundreds of miles long in which the light from the core has never fully faded before it brightens again, and you will reach the Way of Lanterns in the flooded countries of Umbra. These sparse, hardy settlements compete with freezing cold, pitch dark, and crushing gravity to scrape by on the very edge of the known world. Think of Umbra like the Arctic. Communities here are small and tightly knit, bound by a common desire only to survive in a world that, down here, does not feel like it was built for them. You are vagabonds. You have no memory of who you were. You do not know what you are. You know nothing about this world or yourselves except its language and your names. You have washed up on the shores of reality, emerging from a point beyond which no human can travel and survive. But you did. And as you wake up in this strange, terrifying, beautiful world, you will need to learn everything you can to survive. Welcome to Nibiru. Okay, so we're going to start the game with Zach.
Yes.
Your character, Vesa, is drowning. You are freezing cold and you feel like there is a massive weight pushing you down and down and down below the water. You cannot breathe. Your lungs are out of air. You also, like, there is this weight on you that feels like you can't expand your chest at all. You are suffocating. You're drowning. What do you do?
I do want to see if I know which direction to swim and swim that way.
Okay, give me a roll. So 3d4s and tell me if you get a 4.
I get 2 4s.
Amazing. Yeah, so you spot not only a kind of faint light above you, but also shadows in the light moving, and you start moving towards them. Okay, give me another roll, please.
All right. That isn't 1 4.
Okay, amazing. So, like, actually, despite this, like, crushing weight, you realize there's more strength in you than you knew you had. And, you know, at the back of your mind, you're starting to realize you have no idea what strength you have. You have no idea who you are or what you are or where you came from. But that doesn't matter. You're drowning. You've got other things to focus on. So you manage to, like, get up. And as you get up, a strong arm grabs yours and a hand, like, tightens around your arm. And suddenly you're being pulled out of the water and heaved up into the freezing cold. You all right?
I think Vesa's thinking about the implications of that question and the many different answers that could be given to that question, and then just decides on, no,
Okay, all right. Hang on a minute. And you look up into the grizzled, quite scarred face of a woman with short, kind of steely grey hair, a big oil jacket on, and she's kind of got some kind of like weapon over her back. She's the person, her arms are soaking wet where she's just pulled you in. Behind her, there is a kind of slightly more slender man in his 40s, dark hair. He's like watching you quite warily. And beside him, a child, a teenager, a very skinny, kind of wiry kid who's like watching you with big wide eyes. And you are on a small fishing boat in a massive midnight black lake in a massive, massive steel vault, you think. You can't quite see the edges of the ceiling or the walls. You are completely alone in the darkness with these two people, three people. Give me a roll, please.
Two fours.
Okay. You also notice that in front of this boat, or beside this boat, swimming around it, circling it, there is a strange, diaphanous, slimy, purple, stingray-like creature with a maw of sharp, jagged, glassy teeth, which is just slowly circling and circling and circling the boat.
What is that?
Oh, that's don't worry about that. That's our slicer. Her name's Belitum. She's ever so friendly. And the woman who kind of pulled you out the water puts a hand in her pocket and takes out a small handful of what look like batteries, like AAA batteries, and she scatters them into the water. And the thing like moves towards them like a shark in a feeding frenzy. Its tail like lashing, and you watch as like kind of electric arcs splash across the water as it feeds on them.
Doesn't look friendly.
Oh, yeah, no, she's real affectionate. She just loves these things, and the woman kind of offers you, like, some of these batteries. You can feed her if you want.
No, thank you.
Okay, don't worry about it. Where are you from, stranger? You don't look like you're from around here.
I don't know where I am from.
Okay, well, I can imagine you've been under a terrible shock. And she turns around to the man in his 40s and kind of snaps at him and goes, Ziatim, come on, get him in the crash. Sorry, what pronouns do you go by?
This is interesting. What pronouns should I go by?
Not sure I can answer that question for you, stranger, but I tell you what, I'll just use your name. What's your name?
Vesa.
It's good to meet you. My name's Asharu. This is my brother, Ziatim, and my nephew, Ludori. And the kid, like, kind of, like, waves at you, still, like, eyes big as dinner plates in his head as he's, like, staring at you. And you turn around and you see a massive, massive, massive tunnel, a big kind of arching circle. And, like, that tunnel easily is, like, maybe a mile high, 3-4 miles wide, and beyond it is just, like, pitch black. It looks like the opening of, like, a black hole. And the kid is, like, just staring at you as the man in his 40s comes over and lights a pipe. This steel metal pipe that smells sweetly of, like, something like tobacco or licorice, like, somewhere in between the two. And he kind of passes it towards you. You're going to need this.
What is it?
It's Kraj.
What do I do with it?
He kind of looks at the woman, and the woman just, like, frowns at you, goes, you're a real strange sort, aren't you? How do you describe Kraj? And she looks at, like, the man, and the man kind of goes, you breathe it in, and it helps your lungs kind of hold against the weight of the world.
Okay.
It stops you from being crushed. It'll help.
Okay. Vesa will take it and smoke it. I don't know how well this is going to go for them, but,
give
you know.
Give me a roll.
I fail.
Yeah, so you try to breathe it in and you choke. You're just like, you were not expecting it to be that strongly tasting of licorice.
I don't like this. This is not right. Nice.
Okay, yeah, I get that.
I think he might just be sick off the side of the boat.
Okay. Yeah. So like they all kind of like look at you. No one really moves towards you. The slicer, Belitum, she kind of like comes closer to the sick kind of curiously and then like clearly does not like it and like whips around, turns away, like swims off a bit. And the kid kind of takes out like a small like handful of these sort of almost chewable gummies and he goes,
I don't like smoking it either, but you've really got to take it, otherwise Kabaru is gonna make it hard for you to breathe. Just swallow these.
Thank you. I'll take it. What is Kabaru?
It's you know how right now you feel like there's something really heavy on top of you and it's hard to breathe?
Yes.
And you know it's like it's making your muscles hurt and like everything is kind of pushing you down?
Yes.
That's
yes.
Kabaru. So this well, Dad, what is it? And the guy in his 40s kind of looks over and is like, it creates synthetic gases which essentially help your lungs hold up against the force of the weight.
I see, yes.
And the kid at this point, now that he's closer to you, now that he's spoken to you and kind of broken the ice, is now just like really up in your space. And he's kind of like, so, how did you end up in Angel Corridor? How are you alive?
I'm afraid I don't have answers to your questions. Do I know anything that I can tell this child?
Give me a roll.
Hang on. No, fail. I fail.
Okay, yeah, no. Nope, you got nothing. You just woke up in a lake drowning.
I feel as though you may have more answers concerning my situation than I do.
The kid kind of puffs up his chest and like, yeah, well, actually, I am really smart.
Yes.
So, you know, if you've got any questions, you just ask me and I'll probably know.
Where? That's a good one. Where?
So, I mean, that's Angel Corridor, and he points to this mm-hmm. massive, massive tunnel.
Okay.
So that's like, I don't know, like the end of the world, I guess?
End of world. Okay.
You're in Umbra? You know Umbra? Like, the flooded countries, wave lanterns.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, so...
Yeah, definitely. Great.
Yeah, so...
Sorry, a bit of me stuck in there. Hang on. Yes, I understand. Umbra.
Yeah, so this is the Hidden Waterways. This is the edge. We've, like I said, this is my dad, Ziatim. That's my aunt, Asharu. We're fisher people, I guess. I don't know. Do you know what you are?
You get fish and eat them.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
Do you want some?
Yes. I do.
Kid like turns around, opens a kind of cooler, and brings out like some like salted kind of smoked dried fish and passes you some. It's sort of like fish jerky.
I think they're gonna sniff it. I'm curious if I can roll to see what they think of it.
Yeah. Give me a roll.
This smells very nice. I succeeded, by the way.
Yeah, it's good. You should eat it. It's not for smelling. Like, it's not like the crash. You're supposed to, like, chew
it. I don't breathe this.
No.
Okay, I put it in my mouth, and I think instinctually start to chew it. This is nice.
Yeah. Oh, but Ani Hsiao says that you're not supposed to talk with your mouth open, though. I mean, you're not supposed to eat with your mouth. Eat, talk, what? What a, oh, man.
It's rude.
It's real strange.
It is rude?
Yeah.
Rude. I know rude.
It's rude. Yeah. Oh, so I bet you're an Aku. You look like an Aku. You're all, like, skinny.
Yes.
And Zach, could you please describe Vesa for us?
Vesa, I think... is very kind of wiry, skinny, kind of has a very kind of high cheekbones and kind of a constant like bemused expression on their face. A bit unsure, but I think has kind of open eyes, very kind eyes. Yeah, I'd say quite slim, not a very broad, muscular kind of build.
And I think what you notice about all three of these people, even the kid, even though the kid is like wiry and kind of skinny, all of them are quite stocky, quite solid. It's like, I mean, literally they have big bones. Like it's strange. They definitely look physically different to you, quite markedly so. And they all also kind of have slightly clouded eyes, and they're looking around this extremely dark lake, like as if they can see pretty easily. Whereas for you, it's a little bit more difficult. And yeah, the kid kind of looks and goes, yeah, you definitely seem like an Hey, Dad, he says he cares about, like, polite and rude, so I reckon he's Antamarin. What do you think? And Ziatim is just like, Ludori, stay away from the stranger, and kind of, like, guides the kid away from you.
Goodbye.
I mean, you're on a small boat, so the kid walks 3 feet away and sits down and kind of, like, waves. And, like,
goodbye.
Bye. Good morrow. Yeah.
Good morrow.
That's what I heard they said. Up in Antumbra, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And at that point, Asharu kind of like comes over, puts a hand on your shoulder. Now, you sure you don't remember anything? Is there somewhere we can take you?
No. Where would there be to take me?
Well, we're going back to Nataku, which is biggest, safest city in Umbra.
It is nice in Nataku.
I mean, it's as nice as anything gets down here.
We go.
I call it
maybe
nice.
We go there. We can go there. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. We'll go back there. We finished our trip. I mean, like the kid said, we can't go past that point anyway. She kind of gestures to this like big black hole.
And what is there?
That's an angel corridor.
Okay.
Kabadu gets so heavy there that boats just sort of crumple up like paper.
Not nice.
No, and I've seen people like their blood freezes. It's you can't survive past that.
Bad. Yes, bad. Very bad.
Yeah.
Yes,
bad.
Understood. I understand.
Say, stranger, do you know how to swim?
I don't like the water.
Yeah, you know what? Considering what just happened, I think that that's reasonable. Well, I tell you what, you stay real safe, and actually, and she kind of moves over to the center of the boat, and as she does, you notice that there is this big sort of trap door in the bottom of the boat. And she lifts it up, and you see underneath is the strangest thing. It's like a sort of sleeping bag, but like underwater, and it's filled with water. And she picks up from the backpack this big sort of breathing apparatus, like it's kind of like a cushioned helmet, like very worn, very old. And she goes, you might want to get some rest. Use the DDM, it'll let you sleep properly. Folk like you struggle to sleep down here. You know, the crash doesn't stick in all night, so you'll start having trouble breathing and it'll make it harder for you to rest. So if you go in the water, it kind of buoys you up and cancels that out a bit. So I can give you this and you can rest in here.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
You're welcome, stranger. I hope something comes back to you. As I said, we'll be on our way now, but probably safest for you to stay down there where you can't fall out the boat, huh?
Okay, thank you.
And she kind of gives you this big helmet, you put it on, and you get this mask over your face. And as you do, like, oxygen rushes into your lungs. And you realize it's only at this moment, sort of like if you're in a, like, smoky kitchen and you don't realize that you haven't been breathing properly, and then someone opens the door and suddenly, like, oh, right, I was only using, like, 3/4 of my lung capacity. You're suddenly like, oh, this is what it's like to be able to breathe. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is. And she kind of like, as she kind of guides you to get into this kind of like water-filled pod, she moves something that looks like a fishing rod at the front of the boat. And you see on the end of it, there's this kind of clump of like, it looks like just a bunch of battery packs strapped together that are kind of glittering with electricity. And when they hit the water, kind of sparks skitter out across the black liquid. And you watch the slicer immediately kind of like come to the front of the boat, and you watch the kid, Ludori, like put a harness on the slicer, and he kind of pets it, like the back of it as he does so, and it sort of like the edges of its like sort of fins like frill a bit and it starts moving. And as it starts moving, you feel the boat lurch forward and then it kind of settles into a smooth, fast pace as they turn around on this massive midnight lake and turn away from the end of the world and start sailing back towards civilization. And you are kind of led into this like pod and the door shuts over your head and you are in this warm water and you can breathe and you're kind of, your body is being cradled and you're safe. And slowly but surely, you fall asleep. Now, it takes you about 3 days before you see anyone else. So what do you do over the course of those 3 days?
I think Vesa would like to try and understand what they are seeing as much as possible. Because I think Vesa is very curious and trusting in people and things and perhaps doesn't know that there are bad things in the world yet. So I think is trying to learn more about things, testing the limits of things and understanding what the rules are around them.
Okay, so give me a roll.
I succeed.
So, at first there's not much, just big steel tunnels with these like endless sort of black waterways. In some of them, there's fungi growing on the ceiling and that fungi pulses and glows with a dull kind of light. Most of it is blue, but you do notice over the course of your travels that green fungi grows on sort of rusting metal and you notice some of that as well in certain places. Occasionally, you see these strange feathered deer-like creatures. They have big black twisting horns and long feathered bodies that are blue and these big long feathered tails, and they kind of like run in small herds. You see one skipping up the side of like a vault wall as if it were like a slope. You see them occasionally. You see a couple of like bird-like creatures and you see that every time they settle on the fungi, those fungi light up like fireworks. And often the color of the birds corresponds to the color of the fungi as if like they prefer different kinds. You notice that your slicer, Belitum, seems genuinely affectionate towards especially the kid and Ashari, the woman. And you notice that Ziatim, who is the guy, is a little bit more quiet, a bit more scholarly, doesn't seem as at home here in the wilds as his sister. And, you know, you hear them speaking about, like, Amber, about the wise folk councils, about kind of the fact that Ludori is going to be doing his inheritance soon, which is the thing where kids in Umbra cultivate small boats full of fungi and then sail them out to the other settlements, sharing and providing food for other people as a representation of community and sharing community. So he's, like, a little anxious about that and talking a lot to his dad about it and being like, oh, yeah, and, like, I think I'll make sure the red fungi, like, stay okay by, like, doing this thing. And I'm going to rig this up and, you know.
You like fungus?
Well, I mean, not really, but I like what they represent. Well, I don't, well, I mean, it's important, you know? Like, it's food, and everyone needs food, and there's not a lot of it around here, so.
Because if no food, you die.
Die, yeah, yeah.
Oh, and yes, oh, yes, yes.
I'll show you my boat when we get back.
That would be very nice. Yes, thank you.
It looks amazing. Me and my friends have been painting it for literally months, and it has the sickest designs. Like, everyone is going to immediately know it's from Nataku. Oh, like, cool? Like, good?
Unwell.
No, well, I mean, yeah, but, like, no. It's like, okay, mine are worse than my dad. Okay, oh. Like...
I am bad?
Oh, no, I don't...
I am bad.
Oh, no! Oh, man. No. It's just, okay. If you're a kid...
This is not what you wanted from me. Sorry.
No, I like it. If you're a kid and you're talking to other kids, then sick can mean good. It's like a secret code.
I see. Yes.
Yeah.
A code. So yeah. Other does not know, but you and I do know.
Yeah. Yeah,
and we
you're cool.
Believe we know sick to mean good.
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
This is sick.
Yeah. Yes. He goes to high five you.
I understand.
I assume you don't know what a high five is, but he goes to high five you.
I am to strike you?
Yeah, like put your hand here. like this.
Okay. High five.
Roll to high five.
Yes.
Fuck. I don't want to hit this kid, man. Can I add a memory to so I can not hit this kid? Oh, I really don't want to
hit
this.
I'm not going to let you make a memory for high fives. You can use an influence point if you fail.
Thank you. I really don't want to hit this kid.
Plus two to high fiving.
I do succeed.
Okay, cool. It is the sickest high five.
Very good.
Very loud
Very
voice.
Sick.
Yeah, exactly. It makes like the noise kind of like shatters throughout like this like metal and water cavern. And as it does, you notice like a kind of distant herd of Iolu like startle and kind of like go running and like a bunch of birds fly off because like this was a good high five. But after a couple of days of sailing, of a fairly quiet, slow kind of movement, give me a roll, Vesa.
I am to strike you.
I fail.
Oh, no. Okay, so you don't notice. Who does? All right. So Ziatim, this, like, old man, he kind of, like, gets up a little concerned and puts a hand on Asharu's shoulder, and he points. And when he points, Vesa, you see as well that there are, like, bubbles coming out of the water, and you see a hand, like, grasping at the air and disappearing.
Judith. There is someone in the water. We need... It's not good. It's bad. This is
way ahead of you, buddy. Don't worry about it.
Good.
And Asharu kind of like moves
sick.
this.
What?
Midori.
Is sick?
All right, I will deal with you in a minute. And she kind of like she moves the fishing line, and as it does, like the slicer like swims very very fast, like really like speedboat fast towards this figure. Juno, you are drowning.
Oh no, that's bad news.
Gravity is pushing down on your shoulders. It is making it difficult for you to move your chest, and you can't breathe anyway because you don't have any air. You are freezing cold. It's so cold that like your muscles are seizing up and you are sinking down into the dark. What do you do?
Try and kind of panic swim upwards.
Okay, give me a roll, please.
Okay. I did not succeed. I did badly.
Oh no. Yeah, so you feel yourself like you try, but like seriously, the gravity here is double Earth's gravity. And I don't know if you've ever experienced something like that, but it really is just like a really big hand just pushing you down. And you try to swim back up and you cannot. And the further down you go, the colder it gets and the more numb your body gets. And you can feel yourself sinking and sinking and sinking. Vesa, on the surface, the bubbles disappear, and you can see that there was a figure in the water, but they are disappearing with alarming speed. What do you do?
Okay, I feel as though Vesa is a person of very direct action. Okay. I think Vesa is gonna get in the water.
I was hoping you would say that. That's such a dumb move.
I know.
I love it for that.
I know. Zach knows that this is a bad idea, but Vesa is a very problem is there. Problem needs to be not there. And so I, as a being with agency, will solve that problem.
Thank you. I'm both
cool.
touched
so
and appalled.
Right, roll.
Fail. You can use an influence point.
I am
going to
use an influence point to
I'm going to use an influence point to redo this. Succeed.
I succeed.
All right, cool. So you jump into the water, and as you go, you hear like Ludori the kid kind of yelp and go, "Wait, Vesa!" And you feel like a hand like just grasping at the back of your like kind of the jacket they've given you, but then like they miss. You pull away. You sink into the water. The first thing that hits you is the cold. It is like a slap to the face. The second thing that hits you is like the gravity, like, and the way that it's like pushing down on you. And like, so you're kind of like swimming down, and it is way too easy to swim down. And you're a little bit worried about how difficult it will be to swim up. But you do manage to swim down really fast because you're being pushed down by literal
sure.
gravity.
Yeah.
and you kind of like see this person disappearing into the dark, and you're able to get hold of them. Judo, how do you react when someone grabs you?
I think at this point, like, reactions are probably a little bit of an oversell for what's going on. Probably just like renewed energy scrambling.
Yeah.
Upwards.
Cool. That's fair.
All right. So Juno and Vesa. So what we're going to do now is an assisted role. So in Nibiru, when two players are attempting the same task, what you can do is one of you can give an extra dice to the other one, and then one of you rolls for both of you. So I think it makes sense in this case for Vesa to do the rolling, because Vesa is not drowning.
Yeah.
But Juno, if you are helping them save you, then you can add a dice to
that. I would love to do that. I would love
okay,
to
I will Vesa roll four dice. 4d4. Let's hope one of them's a four. two of them are a four, so this is great news.
Amazing. Yeah, so it really helps. Juno, you kind of do find some strength with this, like, sudden, like, hope, and you manage to start kicking, and both of you start making, like, an actual difference and swimming towards the surface. And as you do, you feel, like, the gravity is still pushing down on you, but you can see, like, the darkness receding, and there is some kind of faint light above you. And then both of you feel, like, a sudden weight, like, hit you in the back really hard. And you have no idea what it is for a second. But then, Vesa, you... oh, actually, give me a roll. In fact, both of you, give me a roll.
I succeed.
I did not. I did bad.
Okay. So, Juno, you're still distracted by the whole dying thing. But, Vesa, you recognize this as the nets that Ludori and Zayatum and Ashara use. So you kind of sink back into it and, like, help Juno as you are both caught in this net and heaved up onto the boat. And the first thing that happens is Vesa, Asharu, like, picks you up by the scruff of your shirt. She's a very strong woman.
What are you doing?
What exactly did you think you were doing?
There was a...
You could have died! And she kind of, like, shakes you.
I could have died.
You could have died! You could have drowned! Child! Sit down! You're worse than the teenager! And she kind of, like, just puts you down.
I am not bad.
And, like, Ludori is kind of, like, comes over and is, like, has, like, kind of, like, blankets and is, like, wrapping them around you. And basically you feel, like, your whole body shuddering with, like, painful shivers now as suddenly the cold hits you. And Ludori is, like, very anxiously, like, just piling blankets on top of you. Just, like, there are about six blankets at this point.
This
pretty
is
much
good.
Every blanket on the boat.
This is good.
What were you doing? That was so insane. You shouldn't have done that. You could have died. What if you had died? What if that would have been terrible? And
they were in water, and water is bad. Water is bad. They needed to not be in the water.
I need to talk about this. Okay. And Ludori is, like, kind of just, like, just very anxiously patting the blankets around you. This child, like, over the past couple of days has become quite fond of you and nearly just watched you fully drown. So, like, it's just very shaky and worried. Meanwhile, Juno, Ashari and... cough it out. That's all right. All right, stranger, do you know who you are or where you are?
I am... on a boat.
You are on a boat. That's right. That's good. It's okay. Everything's going to be okay. Just breathe easy. And Ziasim, like, lights up a pipe of this strange licorice smelling stuff that kind of puts this oily smoke into the air, and he hands it to you. You're going to want to breathe this. It'll make it easier to breathe.
I just grab it and, like, hungrily, just like,
cool. All right, give me a roll.
I made it.
Amazing. Yeah, so you, like, feel this warmth flood into your body, and it feels really good, because not only, like, the nice thing about Kraj when you smoke it is that not only does it help, like, kind of reinforce your lungs against the gravity and alleviate that, but also it is physically warming you up, and you were very, very, very cold. So you breathe it in, and this, like, wave of warmth and relief floods through your body on this kind of, like, slightly sweet like licorice tobacco smoke. And you like feel relief coming through you. And as you do, you notice like the man, this sort of like slightly slender man, like saying something to this child behind him. And then suddenly like there are blankets being piled on top of you as you kind of like shiver and smoke this crash. And the woman standing over you, this grizzled kind of scarred woman with short gray hair and like a big, big jacket, looks at you and she goes, "All right, my name's Asharu. Do you know what your name is?"
Juno.
Juno. Great.
Yes. Yeah, that's my name, Juno. Yeah. Thank you. And hey, you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I am Vesa.
I'm Juno.
It is nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you too.
Yes.
Okay, I know three things now. Okay.
You know three things. I know more than that now.
Congratulations.
Ludori kind of stunned.
It is very good to learn new things. You will enjoy yourself.
That's good to hear.
Ludori stands between you. It's like, I've been teaching them so many things. I can teach you as well. I know so many things.
Yeah, I think I'd like to know more than three things. But for now, at least I know three things.
And Asharu kind of chuckles and like squeezes your shoulder and goes, "All right, do you remember anything about where you came from, if you were with anyone?"
I remember being in the water, and that was awful. And now I'm not in the water, and that's much better.
All right, well, that then it makes you a lot like our new friend here. And Juno, could you please describe yourself for us?
I think Juno has the kind of build that you might get from, like, one of those Tudor women that works on a farm. Like, quite stocky and built, but a bit soft at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ashari kind of looks at you and goes, like, "Look like maybe you're one of the Ernests who... Do you remember Penumbra at all? We sometimes get travellers coming down here."
I don't know what most of those words are.
"Well, that's all right. We'll deal with it tomorrow. Well, my name's Asharu. This is my brother, Ziatim. This is my nephew, Ludori. And this is our new friend, Vesa. We picked them up a couple days ago. They were out here saying... I don't know if it was the same as you. I mean, it was a few days' travel, so maybe it's unconnected, but awful strange to meet two of you with no memories at the edge of the world. Still, we're going back to Nataku. It's a city. It's safe, safe as anything gets down here. And I'm happy to give you some passage if that's what you want."
"Thank you. Yeah, thank you all."
"You're welcome. Now, I suggest that you do one of two things. We can feed you, or you can get some sleep." And she kind of, like, gestures towards the
fish. "Fish is good."
Okay. Some food would be lovely, thank you.
That's not me, the player, insisting. That is just Vesa providing you with information.
And Ludori kind of, like, immediately jumps to it. I think... Vesa, give me a roll.
I succeed.
So I think you have noticed that Ludori is very much enjoying the fact that because they have traumatized guests, we are having much more than the usual rations on this trip. And so he excitedly starts getting out way more food than he really should.
Yes, much fish. We need many fish.
Yeah, right. See, that's what I keep telling you, Dad. Like, they're traumatized, you see. So, actually, we all need food. And he kind of gets out this, both this kind of salted dried fish. And Junior, he also brings over this hard, almost like cracker-like, dark green sort of substance and hands it to you. Here you go. It's a breast cake.
A breast cake?
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
All of you, honestly. Yeah, no, it's made from a mama's breast. No,
let's not go down that road.
No, rust cake, because it's green fungi. It grows on rusty things, so we call it rust cake.
Oh, okay.
Bread, basically.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Give me a roll to see how much you like this food. Okay.
I did get a 4.
Nice, yeah. So actually, it's pretty good. It's sort of like a kind of seaweed bread, so kind of like hard, salty, a little chewy, but genuinely like pretty nice, pretty well seasoned. Like you like it, and it goes well with the fish. And it, as you kind of eat, and the crush kind of sinks in and kind of gets into your bloodstream, and like everything starts working, you start feeling warmer and warmer. You start drying off. You start feeling a lot better than you were like half an hour ago. Okay, so you together now, Vesa and Juno, are in this fishing boat, and it's another couple of days of sailing before anything else of note happens. Juno, what do you do in those days of sailing on the ship?
I probably try and get to know all the people on the boat, and I think I want to try and figure out what my place could be. So I'm looking for things that I enjoy doing or like feel an aptitude for, and also what do I absolutely hate doing? So I'm probably trying to help out with a little bit of everything, learning as much as I can.
Cool. Okay. So give me 3 rolls and tell me what order you succeed or fail.
So on the first one, I have failed. On the second, I have succeeded with 1 success. And on the third, I have also succeeded with 1 success.
Okay. So on the first day you try fishing, it's really boring. There are not a lot of fish around here, so mostly it's just a lot of waiting. And, you know, like they kind of leave the nets in and they just stay still. And you, I think, realize after a couple of hours of sitting next to the net next to Asharu, who is the kind of woman who just can sit silently smoking her pipe for hours, you realize that this is not your ideal kind of day. It's really boring. Just not liking it. The second thing you try, though, is sailing. So this boat has a rudder at the back made of steel. And at the front, as I mentioned before, there's this like fishing rod type contraption, which baits the slicer belatum, the stingray-like creature, to tug the boat at like kind of speedboat speeds. And I think on the second day, maybe you ask Asharu if you can have a go at like using the rudder, using the tiller, and she lets you. This you love. What does it look like when you really enjoy like steering the boat at quite high speed through these waterways?
I think it takes me a little while to get into it. It's basically that meme of the girl trying kombucha for the first time. But like once I find my rhythm, then it's just like pure joy. Just really enthusiastic, like, oh, this is brilliant.
Vesa, give me a roll.
I critically fail.
Okay.
What have I done?
So here's what happens. Juno is really, really good at sailing. But unfortunately, they are also having a lot of fun, which means that at one point they turn a corner really fast, the boat rocks up onto its side, and basically you just get thrown out of the boat. You land in the water.
Oh no, I'm so sorry.
And I want you to give me a negative memory with sailing or water, whichever you prefer.
Okay.
This will give you a -1 to all tasks associated with that skill.
Fair. Okay. And I just want to be clear for game purposes, I can't do the death of the character.
No, they can't die.
No, but I can't do like the death of the AI.
Oh no, yeah. Like this is so when you're playing a Vagabond in the Machine, you are trying to write your memories in chronological order from when they woke up to the end. So this, because it's your first memory, is actually the thing that made them start waking up.
Right, I understand. Okay, so I recall being shoved into a very deep pool of water. And the fear of depth, of nothingness below me, is what awoke the consciousness of Vesa.
Oh, so they were just born in fear, yep. Fear of water specifically. That's distressing. Okay, so yeah, you land in the water, you freak out, but Juno, you're a really good sailor, so you are able to get the boat back around to them pretty much immediately. Do you guys want to give me that scene, or shall we skip onwards? I don't mind. If you want to roll.
I do not like water. Water is very, very bad.
I'm so sorry. You're okay now. Oh, I feel just terrible. Is there anything you need?
I could use affection.
I will give Vesa a hug.
They are soaking wet.
Oh, like... you're very soggy.
Very but afraid. This is a...
If you enjoyed this and want to hear the rest of the episode, click the link in the podcast description to be taken over to the episode. We hope you enjoy and check out the rest of Realms of Peril and Glory. And remember, we will be back soon with more Orphans content. And we're so excited about some of the stuff coming down the pipeline. And remember that if you'd like to have your say in how we follow up on the Orphans investigation, then head over to our Discord and chat to us in the Orphans spoiler thread. Hope to see you there. Thank you so much, and we will see you soon.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Coco from Les Deux Magots, the epitome of bliss, the pinnacle of creation, the...
We're down to our last thermos.
What? Impossible. Put in an order to Paris right away. Chop chop, vite vite, delivery takes 10 hours at least. What are you waiting?
No.
No?
No. We haven't had any new clients in over a month. Until business picks up, we have to tighten our belts.
But I can't work without Coco.
You're not working. Well, not at the moment.
Because we haven't had any clients.
Because you turned them all down.
But they were so boring.
It can't be Jimmy Hoffa and D.B. Cooper every day.
Making people disappear is an art.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it can't be parachutes and plane hijackings all the time. We have to take on some good old bread-and-butter disappearances to keep the lights on around here. Or in our case, to keep the cocoa flowing.
Okay, next client who contacts us, I'll take on their case.
You promise?
I promise. Now give me the last of that cocoa.
It looks like we have a new client.
The Amelia Project, a podcast series full of suspense, surprises, twists, laughs, and cocoa. Go to ameliapodcast.com or search for The Amelia Project wherever podcasts can be found. And remember, leave your message after the beep.